Good morning, everybody. And I thought last week the music was as good as it was ever going to get, and then that happened. Thank you so much for the beautiful music. And thank you, Steve, for telling me to speak louder and for also running our equipment this morning. Thank you very much, Steve. And his wife, Pam, contributed some of her equipment so that we could do a service for you this morning. And then thank you, Cindy, for everything that you always do. And that pretty much covers everybody in this room. Oh, yes, thank you, Kevin. But really, thank you all for your presence here this morning in whatever capacity that is. And I'm just especially touched this morning by the just love that's in the air itself. And, you know, the sunshine doesn't hurt with that, does it? I told Cindy I was late this morning. Sorry, I was doing yoga in the backyard, and I didn't want to peel my bare feet from the soil and the sod of Mother Earth. Maybe you can relate. So I'd like to bring you on a little bit of a guided meditation this morning. So first, please get yourself in a nice, relaxed position, your favorite comfortable position. But don't go to sleep. Instead, close your outer eyes and open your inner eye. Immediately feel the presence of life thrill up your spine. From the very center of your being, radiating in all directions, connecting with the Christ presence and with the presence of God. At once declare, I am grounded, I am centered, I am connected. Nothing on earth can hold me. Yet how beautiful is our Mother Earth. So instead of being held, we allow ourselves to be a part of. So imagine yourself now wherever you're at. Maybe you're surrounded by walls if you're indoors. Maybe there's too much concrete around for you. Whatever it is. A little bit too much noise. So you get in your ethereal car, whether you're driving or being driven, and you drive out the windy country roads as it gets less and less busy, more and more quiet. You see a little nook on the side of the road and a giant sign that says, park here and get out. So you do. And then another sign at a trailhead that says, walk with me. And so as you walk into this trail, immediately you can tell through your breath that something has changed. And your body responds and lifts up, opens up. New receptors you didn't know you had begin to intuit your surroundings. Soon you can't think of anything but the bird song, the smell of soil, and of trees. As you continue walking or gliding, you pass a river, hearing the bubbling of the water against the cool stones and against the bank even. And you walk over a bridge that crosses the river deeper now into the woods. You are blissfully lost. You wouldn't go back if you could. And as you continue onward, you see a clearing. So you go to the clearing, and it opens up to a prairie. And there is tall grass blowing in the wind, back and forth, as the warm sun touches your face, and the cool breeze comes along right with it. You notice a home, and around the home, some of the most beautiful, colorful growth that you've ever seen. Somebody waves to you. And so you go down the trail, down the windy little path that looks like it has been trod by 1,000 feet just this summer. Before you reach the house, there's a chair And you know that is your chair to sit in. And so you plop down gently into this chair, into this seat. And of course, your shoes must come off. And so you do and plant your bare feet onto Mother Earth. But your eyes stay open because of the beauty that surrounds you. And you see the giant sunflowers, like a great eye opened, looking, observing. And you know that that sunflower is as alive as you. But there's so much other growth. Tomato plants and lettuce, kale, things that you've never seen, flowers of all sorts, all growing together in this beautiful radiance. The breeze comes again. The sun has warmed you now. And so you let your outer eyes again gently close. God, what you can hear here, what you can feel, and what you know to be true now about you, that you are a part of everything, and everything lives in you. Now all the voices stop, and there is just the breeze and the presence. And now at once, you are transported back to where you began, sitting in your seat there, or laying where you are laying, as you begin to wiggle your toes a little bit, move them and wiggle your fingers. You know that you have soul traveled, that you have touched the soul of the earth herself, and that you are forever changed. And with that, you can go ahead and gently open up your eyes. And come back present to this moment, whatever this moment is. I guess it's always this moment, right? Have you ever felt like the title of today's talk, especially in these times, Intelligent Life, Reveal Thyself? Do you know what I mean? And that's what I've been really been exposed to lately, is the intelligence of something beyond my human intellect. And a lot of times we think about that intelligent life. We talk about there's got to be intelligent life out there. And we think about all the different species of extraterrestrials there could possibly be. And that's a lot of fun. And I'm sure a spaceship's going to land any day. We all know that. Maybe not, maybe. We don't know. Maybe it's going to happen in some different way. But today I want to talk about, where's the intelligent life here on Earth? And you know, a lot of people love to complain about politics and all those types of things, and that's not what this is about. This isn't about calling people stupid or berating people. It's about this, kind of what we did in our meditation, intelligent life, reveal thyself, like this knowing that it's all around us, and reveal thyself now so that I can see, so that I know what's true for me in my heart. And sometimes that can be hard to do because we're so intelligent in what we already know. And most of our teachings around unity help us to see that there's that our suffering is somehow tied to the ignorance of our own intellectual understanding. And that's not meant to be harsh. I always like to think of the word ignorance as not derogatory, but often innocent. And a lot of times we cause harm to other people or to ourselves through an innocent ignorance. We just didn't know, or we were taught some other way. So today I want to look at I want to look at intelligence through a different lens and show you through a couple of our unity teachings, but also through one of Jesus's teachings, which I guess is a unity teaching, and also through the Tao Te Ching. This has been really speaking again to a lot of us lately. And this is from the 37th verse, and I think it's so appropriate for today. And remember, the Tao is the great way. A lot of people think Tao, T-A-O, is the equivalent to what we call God or source energy. The Tao does nothing but leaves nothing undone. If powerful men could center themselves in it, the whole world would be transformed by itself in its natural rhythms. When life is simple, pretenses fall away. Our essential natures shine through. By not wanting, there is calm, and the world will straighten itself. When there is silence, one finds the anchor of the universe within oneself. A lot of silence and calm. Paramahansa Yogananda said in his book, Man's Eternal Quest, he said this little thing I saw this morning. He said, poise is a beautiful thing. Think of it as a triangle with three sides. Calmness, sweetness, and happiness. That's what nature does to me. And today, a lot of what I want to talk about is about nature. However, Myrtle Fillmore had this little quote that she said, and I think it's about nature ultimately, but she said, as you learn to see the fullness of God's life and love and power and substance in others, you will know that you need not pour out your own for them. That's huge right there. Because how often do we think we need to do something to or for somebody else to cause their transformation, to cause them or to help them to see differently? We all know what a road that is. She says, you will have the knowledge and the light to call their attention to what they have and prompt them to use it. So basically what she's saying is that as we learn within ourselves to find the fullness of God, we don't have to change anybody. Yet when somebody comes along, we will know just what to say or just what to do to help them to find that same God in themselves. Because what works for you doesn't necessarily work for somebody else, no matter how much you think it will. And can you see how much trouble that's gotten us into? I know what's right for you, so I'm going to impose this law upon you. So in the, you know, she says there, call their attention to what they already have and prompt them to use it. And it reminded me of a Bible verse where Jesus does something. He calls the 12 together, the 12 apostles, the 12 disciples, however you want to call them. And he gave them the power and the authority to drive out demons and cure diseases. God, do we do demons and diseases anymore? Well, we certainly do diseases because look, coronavirus is actually a disease. And what about these demons? Well, I had to go to the revealing word because I want to know more about what Unity teaches about this. And the revealing word, if you don't know what that is, it's a book that sort of metaphysically interprets these different words in these verses and in the language that we use in our life. And so Charles Fillmore says that demons are error states of mind that have to be lifted up by the quickening power of spirit. Now there again, that error states of mind, sometimes we hear that and it seems like antiquated language. We've been hearing Charles Fillmore say error thinking for over 100 years. But when we think about it as innocent ignorance, the innocent ignorance needs to be lifted up by the Spirit and made illuminated so we can see what we're doing. So that's what a demon is. So think about that from a different point. When we hear the word driving out demons, we're not doing anything out there. We're absolutely doing it in here. And so he gives them this power to drive out these demons and to cure diseases, but not to run out and cause the curing of themselves, but to help other people see. So he sent them out to proclaim this kingdom of God and to heal the sick within themselves. He told them, and this is my favorite part, because this I can't seem to do, especially when I'm going on an RV trip, or even if I'm going across town for the day. I can't seem to do what he's asking the disciples to do. He says, take nothing for the journey. Not even my duffel bag? No. He says, no staff, because in those days you walked everywhere and a staff was very important to have. But it also represents something spiritually, stability. No bag, no bread, which means no food, no money, and not even an extra shirt. And I don't get that, because when I go somewhere, I need to bring all that stuff. I gotta have my food, I gotta have some money, and I definitely need an extra shirt. But he says, don't bring any of that. Well, why would he tell them that? Well, isn't it because they already are gonna have everything they need? And already do have everything they need. And how does that relate to you and me? Do you ever, when we do these Jesus teachings, do you ever see yourself sometimes like, I could be like Jesus? Or sometimes, God, am I like the disciples? Because a lot of times these guys are, you know, portrayed as buffoons. One of Jesus' greatest disciples, I always like to remember, is the divine feminine, Mary. She does things that none of the dudes can do or do. And we're not just talking about men and women here. We're talking about the divine feminine, the receptive quality, and the divine masculine. So a lot of times in societies, the masculine energy dominates. But it forgets that the world cannot come into being without the sweetness of the divine feminine. And I think that's what Yogananda was talking about. Be calm in your masculinity, be sweet in your femininity, and then we will be happy in all that we do. So he says, whatever house you enter, stay there until you leave that town. If people do not welcome you, leave their town and shake the dust off your feet as a testimony against them. Now, I thought Jesus was for everything. What's he doing being against people here? Well, I looked again in the Revealing Word, or actually the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary. I looked up people. There's just two words that define it. Our thoughts. People in our unity teaching and the way that the Fillmores looked at the Bible teaching, people represent our thoughts. So when it says go into these towns, state of consciousness, and look at the thoughts that you have in these towns, and if they're not copacetic with your spirit, shake that dust off your feet and leave. We leave that behind because it does not serve the higher good. Well, the higher good of what? This is all about you. It's the higher good of you, because you are a kingdom unto yourself, and no one, without your permission, whether you know it or not that you're giving, can tell you what to do or how to be. Shaking the dust off the feet, I always love this. The feet represent understanding. And so whenever we take off our shoes, which I would never do, whenever we take off our shoes and place them on Mother Earth or dust something off of our feet, we're clearing ourselves from misunderstanding so that we can perceive clearly. So then he says, the Bible says, they set out and went from village to village, proclaiming the good news and healing people everywhere. Think about that metaphysically, going from ways of thinking within ourselves to different ways of thinking and healing the thoughts that exist within our own consciousness so that we can live free. You see, today, a lot of times, and I fall guilty of this, I want to go save the world. What can I do to help this? I want to protest, man. I want to raise my fist against what's wrong in the world. But all of the teachings of the spiritual sort of mysticism that sets people free is rooted in that being done within your own self and then taking it into your small communities and sharing it, because it's really about refining the spirit of yourself, of your own soul. So that connects deeply to nature, and it's kind of a weird thing. You know, I got to do this something yesterday that inspired the meditation for today and was just so nourishing to my soul. I got to go out to Ananda Farms, and we had a yoga gathering with some of the veteran yoga people. And, you know, it was all done properly with social distancing, all proper and all that. But Ananda Farms is something else. It is so nourishing of a place, the way that everything works in this copacetic harmony. And, you know, the teachings of Ananda are high mystical teachings. Paramahansa Yogananda was an absolute mystic. And yet, he knew, and we know, and Ananda knows, that there's something about the earth, the food that we consume, the way that we consume it, the communities in which we harmonize with, and the thoughts that we hold within our own being that contribute to the well-being of ourselves and our entire world. And so as we did our yoga in the sun and then went on a little farm tour for about 20 minutes, I was blown away at the symbiotic relationship and the things that the tour guide said. We went to a garden that was so prolific, you wouldn't even imagine the apples, how beautifully pruned they were, and they're just such gorgeous fruit. Every leaf on the plant was perfect. And they said, we don't do anything to the soil. We just be with it and do what it needs. And the way that their chickens and the compost worked and the goats cleared the field. She said, this field here was barren. And when we got here, just open grass and some sticker bushes. And I think what happened, the goats cleared it all and they put a few little things in there. And now it's this jungle. She said, a kid came out to see it. He said, where's the gorilla? That much from nothing. And it's only been there for 7 years. And as we walked, I was just like, I could feel the presence of divine love there, because that's what's practiced. And all of the vegetation, you can go to Everett Farmers Market today and go to the Ananda Farm stand and get a taste of some of their produce. It is alive. It is alive in ways that other grocery stores, it's not alive like that in there. And so I was just blown away by all this. I mean, I could go on and on and tell you how wonderful it is. I will tell you, if you want to go there, it's easy. You just go online and ask them to get a tour and you can go see it. But there was something that was hanging on one of their preparation buildings. There was something that was hanging up. There was Gandhi's principles of natural farming. And I thought, yeah, that works for vegetables and for farming in the earth, but it also works for the human soul and for our communities. And so I want to share that with you. They're just five simple principles, but you know how those simple principles are. If we could actually apply them, our life would change radically. One is harmonious coexistence for mutual benefit. Think about that because we always pulled the weeds and made the soil barren. That's not what you do. The weeds come for a reason, because they're gonna right the soil. She said, we don't do any chemical anything. We don't even care about knowing any of that. Why? Because the earth, nature, is intelligent of herself. Everything you need is right there. We don't have to do anything except be with it. When we want to dominate it and control it, it loses all of its efficacy, all of its vitality, and all of its life, because we wring it out and hopefully it'll turn out $100 bills. And that's what's sort of gone sideways here. I could go way off here, so I'll try to keep on track. So harmonious coexistence for mutual benefit. Nothing born out of Mother Earth is waste. With our modern monoculture farming, there is so much that is destroyed. And if you really think about it, most of the food, probably 90% of the food that's consumed in the world is from those kinds of farms. I don't know if that's true, that's speculation, but if you're eating anything out of a box or whatever, that's made from a way of creating food, sustenance for us, that is very, very, very wasteful. So he just says, nothing born out of the earth is waste. Number three, farming is not man's business. It is his moral duty. A moral duty? What does that even mean? It means that as we sit and let this busyness go, we will begin to reconnect with the naturalness of not only the earth, but of our spiritual nature. And that's what's being asked of us now. That's what this sacred pause is all about, in my view. Number four, all is nature's will. Extract only per your needs. How many of us can honestly raise our hands and say, I take only what I need? And number five, do not hurry. Nature herself does not. Land is a living being. Converse with the farm. So think about that in terms of the farm and, like our meditation, converse with the life around you. But then think about that in terms of your surroundings. As we deeply consider our lives, which everybody is doing right now, do you know how many times I've heard, I'm going to radically change my life and leave everything that I've been doing and move out of the state, get a completely new career, whatever it is, I'm not going to go back to what I was doing. They're conversing with the farm, the inner farm of their divine life. And they're looking at what we are looking at, what does not work for us. And this is not, I do not think that it can be achieved through berating other people, through calling people stupid and that they're wrong and I'm right. I believe that it can only be done in these five principles, in copacetic harmony with the natural life that has been given to us. Think about it. Can you cause your life? And can you end your life? What is it that happens in this crazy thing that we are all a part of now? I want to read to you, but it probably will take too long. In this book, Talks on Truth, from Charles Fillmore, there's a chapter called Microorganisms. And he talks about that microorganisms, everything that we need is already given. When we mess with it, we basically are causing our own disharmony. And when we allow it to be through communion with God, everything comes into being in its own natural accord. And when we align with it, just like it says in the Tao, we can do nothing, yet everything gets done. That is antithetical to the modern way of thinking. So I just invite you, I don't know. Really, the truth is I don't know, except that God is the answer. And whatever God is to you, the essence of your being, I believe that when we cultivate that for ourselves, the world that we see changes. So what an opportunity we have. Thank you so much. Amen.